Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. First, we start with the Charles Schwab Challenge. Emiliano Grillo back in the winner's circle for the first time in 8 years. We are on to some NCAA talk. We have men's finals from both D1 and D2. Women's finals from D1 match play wrapping up this week. And we are on to the Memorial at Muirfield Village, hosted by Jack Nicklaus. We will get into a little preview of that, the 10th designated event of the season so far. And then we will also talk about there's some a funny story coming out of Tennessee this past week. So here we go. Starting with the Charles Schwab Challenge. As I said in the opener, Emiliano Grillo back in the winner's circle for the first time in 8 years when he took down, I believe it was Kevin Na in the fries.com open, which is feels making me feel old just saying that. That was a long time ago. A guy that has always been a high quality, top tier ball striker. And if his putter can get working, he can compete. I think he has 8 seconds in his career. Obviously plays well enough to continue to play on the PGA Tour without winning. So congratulations to Emiliano Grillo. How about that double on 18? Were you watching any of it?
So I was admittedly passively watching it. Mm-hmm. Lauren's mom and dad were in town this weekend, so I was playing a bit of host and trying to catch as much of it as I can or could. But on the topic of you feeling old, I was watching and I remember looking at him and I thought to myself, I remember when this guy won and thinking like how young he looked and like how much older he looks now. And I was just like, geez, because like he kind of, you know, I don't want to say fell off the face of the earth, but he wasn't like a big name in the mix for quite a while there. And so not a name that you're really following intensely, but seeing him out there, I was like, oh, he's a little bit older now.
Yeah, there's a little bit of gray in that beard.
A little bit of gray coming in. But yeah, congrats to him. Just seems like a nice dude, like all around. You know, I saw the thing he did with the two kids, whatever, bringing them over and letting them hit the ball. And I know, whatever, you know, cameras are around, this, that, whatever. But still didn't have to do that, I guess. But just seems like a pretty nice guy. And from what I've heard on other podcasts and around the rumblings of the league, people seem to like him. So.
Yeah, and obviously a pretty unfortunate situation they was able to bounce back from. I think the only thing going into, to kind of set the stage a little bit, Harry Hall and Adam Shank were in the final group. Harry Hall, I believe he's a 25-year-old Englishman, has had some success in the past across the pond and as far as in the amateur ranks, but this was kind of his first big test on a Sunday on the PGA Tour. Him and Adam both, it's hard to say. I would say they definitely struggled. They shot 73 and 72. Respectfully, Harry shot 73. Adam shot 72. Harry made a bogey on number 18 to miss the playoff by one. Neither one of them could really get it going. You see it all the time where I feel like it can go either way, where guys can feed off each other in a good way when they're both playing well, or in this case where it kind of just felt like they were both stuck in neutral a little bit. Couldn't really get a ton going at times, and that's just kind of the way it goes. And Emiliano Grillo had a 2-shot lead at this point. It was 2-shot lead going into 18, and does the one thing you can't do, and is that hit the ball or make a double on 18 to get into the playoff. So just to be able to do that, make a double, and then have to sit there for what probably ended up being 30 to 40 minutes waiting for this playoff to happen and then to win the playoff. Very impressive. He made some putts that, I mean, if he made those putts on other weeks, he might be more than a 2-time winner on the PGA Tour. So this is, I mean, I'm very, very happy for Emiliano.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely his weak spot of his game was the putting. So as soon as he gets that, I mean, he hits his irons really well. But going back to Harry Hall, so I just have to say, you know how in like animated shows, like a Family Guy or a South Park or whatever, they'll do like a crossover. And so they'll bring like the Simpsons into Family Guy and they'll turn the Simpsons characters and make them look like Family Guy characters.
Mm-hmm.
He is like Bryson DeChambeau, but Peaky Blinders. if you like blended them together.
Yeah. Yes.
But I mean, I was gutted for the guy. I mean, he went nuclear in the first round. And honestly, like, was just putting like a madman. He actually was negative true strokes gained approached this week. He was just putting like a madman. But to go into the final round and then you see him birdie first two holes, you're thinking it's over, like he's gonna run away with it. And then to not even make it into the playoff is pretty tough. So I feel bad for the guy. That's tough, but hopefully he learns from it. Certainly wasn't a guy I had on my radar, though.
No.
I got to be honest.
And we mentioned really good putting. I think we have to actually quickly. I will say the PGA Tour tweeted out a video of him hitting it in the water in 18, which I'm pretty sure only two balls in the water on 18. One was Harry Hall. The other one was Emiliano Grillo.
Yep.
On the 72nd hole, he retweeted that video. So I think either a guy can take this as like, this is awful. I just kind of threw up myself on Sunday, or in this case where he's a PGA Tour rookie, he just finished T3rd, just made, let me see what, cause I actually have the number of how much it was that he, oh, I thought I did. Never mind. I thought I had how much, the payouts were, but to end up finishing T3rd is still, I mean, there's a lot of good to take away from this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sorry, did you have something?
Yeah, well, after you say what you want to say, I have.
Oh, I just wanted to touch on him because, you know, learning experience kind of along those lines. I can't speak to this per se because I didn't see every single one of his shots, but from what I've been hearing is he was really laying back off the tee all day. And then for some reason on 18, he just blasts driver like 300 yards into the water. So maybe a little bit of course management you can take away from it this week. But
yeah, no, I can see that. I mean, just like when the pressure gets going, what is that saying? Like the first sign of pressure is making a mistake, something like that. The first sign that you're under pressure.
Sounds right. He's only 25, so he's born in 1997. Can you believe that? 1997.
That's not fair. I will. So you mentioned good putting. We have to talk about the other side of the putting, and that will lead to me just going through quickly the remainder of the leaderboard. So Emiliano Grillo first, Adam Shank finished second, Scotty Scheffler finished third, Harry Hall finished third as well. Paul Haley, the second, finished fifth. Michael Kim, sixth, along with Ricky Fowler, Sam Burns. And then in T9th, we had Max Homa. Get right, we, for Max Homa. I'm glad he got right. That's T9th. We will take that. Mark Hubbard, T9th, and Kevin Streelman, T9th, to round out the top 10s. We have to talk about Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler is striking the ball like nobody's ever struck the ball before. Over his last 10 starts, he's gained 11.6 strokes against the field with all around game, but he has lost nearly 5 strokes with his putter at Charles Schwab. It's fascinating to watch him play because all he does is just hit it close or hit it very well and just does not make anything.
So I'm glad you brought this up because Hunter and I have a running bit where we say, is Scottie Scheffler good? Because, like, I mean, truthfully, is he good? Does anybody really know?
I don't like how you just call that a bit because I don't think it's a bit in my mind.
I think I'm fully on Team Scottie Scheffler now because his game, if you were to like take his game and dull it down, like take the brightest crayon in the box and then replace it with the dullest one, which is my game, it would be the same thing because I am terrible at putting. So I am so on team Scottie Scheffler now. And I also love how he's like low key kind of triggered about it, because when people ask him in the media, he's like really short, or he'll just be like, yeah, I've been working on it. I figured it out. Like, it's all good. And then goes out on the course and seemingly is putting with his eyes closed. I love it. I think I'm on team Scottie Scheffler now. I think I have to be.
Yeah, and he might be putting with his eyes closed here pretty soon. He might give that a run. That's the one step. That's a level up from looking at the hole, is putting with your eyes closed. So he could be getting there.
As a man who bought a new putter this weekend, and truthfully was looking at the left-handed putters for a hot second as a right-handed player, I can relate to him, respect it, and I think he's the best player of all time now. He must be.
It's shocking that it's taking you this long to come for full circle on this take.
It's been percolating for quite a while, but I wasn't ready to accept it, because those feet they drive me nuts. They always will. I don't know why. They just do. But and just like his like nonchalant, like he's like a 80-year-old in like a 25-year-old's body. Like, I feel like he probably wakes up every morning and puts his New Balances on and goes for like a light 2-mile walk with his wife.
Oh, he's a Nike athlete. He wears the Monarchs.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Good point. Yes, you're right. Whatever. He's got the Monarchs.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, his putting has been awful for a while now. I mean,
but that's what's so shocking. So in 11 starts in 2023, he has 2 wins. He has 6 top tens, nothing outside of 12th in 11 starts. And I mean, a hefty majority of those are designated events. It is incredible to watch him. Because I think when you think of ball striker, like, you instantly go to Rory McIlroy as like the ball striking king, and that. But now you see stuff like this. Like, this isn't a run. This is a stretch that you don't typically see for this long to hit it this well. And the craziest thing is, like you mentioned, his feet. From a technical standpoint, or just like what you would think would be a consistent swing, he doesn't look like he possesses that, but clearly he is able to do it. His hand-eye coordination, like if you were to rank people with the best hand-eye coordination in the entire world, I think he's got to be in the top 5. Able to do with his hands, like when he can figure out if he's going to hook it or slice it in that like 0.0001 seconds at impact, and do what he needs to do with his hands, it's fascinating to watch.
That, and I just can't get over, I don't know if there's a better player in the league right now at his one jump stop chips. He hits those, and they just every time seem like they're just going to go flying past the hole, but they just stop on a dime. It's insane.
That is one shot, especially now, we'll get a little off topic. Bayview is getting, like, I don't know about down there in Grand Rapids, but up here, like, it just doesn't rain anymore. Like, it's supposed to rain in the springtime, and it hasn't. Maybe it ran one time in the last couple weeks. So the greens are getting firm. And I had a couple times last night where I had like a pretty short side shot. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, how do these pros hit this shot? Is it really as simple as they're getting wedges that often? I know it's all about club head speed. And I think what I need to work on a little bit more of the wrist hinge.
Yeah.
Rather than the
dead arm. They get a lot of action at the lower part of the swing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, let's be honest, they do get new wet. I mean, the clubs do matter to an extent. I mean, I'm gaming wedges that are 5 years old. These guys are gaming wedges that are probably like 5 days old.
That's I feel like I've seen, I want to say it's a couple months, because you can't just, because the difference between a grooved, how far a sand wedge with no wedges or no grooves goes compared to a brand new sand wedge is like easily 7 to 8 yards just with spin rate. So if they get stuck having to figure out that every, I feel like they don't want to do that. So I wonder how they navigate. That would actually be interesting to figure out how they navigate that.
Yeah. You do have a point there, cause they would get the extra spin.
Mm-hmm. Any other takeaways from Charles Schwab? I think Texas Texas delivered again. I think, I mean, everyone, you don't really ever hear any bad things said about Colonial. So it seems like everyone enjoys coming. And, but I guess we do have to talk about, we do quickly, Michael Block.
We got to talk about Blocky.
Michael Blocky. So I think last week, I don't know if Brad ever said it, but Brad essentially said he hated the guy.
I didn't say I hated the guy. Whoa. Pump the brake. You're going to get me canceled here.
I think Brad read the writing on the wall sooner than a lot of people did. And
so,
I'll let you take the floor before I
so I'll touch on it. So I don't know if you listened to No Laying Up, but Big Randy on No Laying Up was on this even before I was. He's more of a cynical.
I don't listen, but I heard.
He's more of a cynical guy than I am. So I'm just watching this last weekend, and don't get me wrong, what he did was phenomenal. Like, for him to get across the finish line, dunking a hole in one, going up and down, qualifying for next year, all that, phenomenal story, great. I knew the media was just going to eat it up, and they did. I mean, and I got to say, so they touched on it a lot on their pod, and so I'm going to kind of take some of their ideas because I agree with them. But he was kind of also put in a tough spot where he was asked to play in an exemption spot, and for him, he's thinking, well, they're giving me this opportunity. I want to do right by them and do all these media show, you know, go take all these podcast invites, do all these interviews, really hype it up, get a lot of people excited for it, get the viewership up for their event because they're being nice enough to give me this exemption. On the other hand, maybe don't do like 30 interviews. I mean, he was on everybody, PM or Foreplay, he was on Howard Stern, he was on the Ripper Magoo with Bob Menery, which is the one that he really got in some hot water for what he claimed to be out of context, but essentially saying that if he could hit the ball as far as Rory, he could be the best player in the world, which, you know, he probably got excited, caught up in the moment. So everything last weekend, great. Everything this weekend, not great.
To the tune of DFL dead last, he shot 81 first round, did turn around with a 74 the second round. And the first round, I tell you, through nine holes, I was like, okay, this guy needs to just, because he was actually not playing. He started off, so he made a, I believe he started on the back nine. What hole did he start on? No, hold on. It was round. I gotta go to round one. He started on. Must have been the front. So he shot 37 on the front, and then that's when things kind of really fell apart. So he was only two over through the front nine of his front round of his first round, and then he went bogey, 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 par, double, double, par, double. So that kind of took the wind out of the sails. I do. I've almost kind of went backwards. I flip flopped. I went from thinking it was a cool story to kind of just being sick and tired of the guy, to now going back to thinking he just, like, he chose very poor words in that Bob Menery interview. If he would have just said something along the lines of, I'd be a better player if I hit it where Rory did, that I would be okay with, because that's just like a simple, you're like 40, 50. I think I want to say Michael Block was 287 driving distance at the PGA. Rory was like 315, something like that, average. So 25 yards. That's not like, that's a good distance with irons. I mean, I would rather hit an 8-iron than a 5-iron, or 8-iron than a 6-iron. So did he say world class?
That's where he got in trouble, is the world class. And
If you just simply said, like, I think I'd be a little bit better, I'd be fine with that. I would be so much more fine with that, because that's just, I think that's a simple fact.
Yeah, because that's just every golfer in the world, right? We're all like, if I could hit the ball 20 yards farther, I would be a better player. Yeah. So everybody could relate with that, but I don't think any one of us is going to say I'd be a world-class player.
No. And then, like, obviously, the second that said, the very moment that somebody, you hit a bad shot on the golf course at Colonial, there's going to be a world class. Oh, what happened to world class? Which I saw, he had a couple where he must have been either he was shorter along of the green. He chipped it over the green and then chipped it back. So he like essentially a double chip, which is in amateur golf. Like if you want to lower your scores, double chips is one thing that could definitely help that, or not having double chips. So that was funny. I saw tweets like that, and then there's always like the guys on the internet that feel like they need to be like the righteous saviors to these poor guys like Michael Block. They're like, well, you couldn't hit that shot.
So, yeah. Warriors. Yeah. Warriors.
Well, it's like, buddy, he said it. So he's got to own it if he said it.
Well, and then I think, so as we progress through the week, you've got the Bob Menery interview where he says the world-class comments, and that in itself, I think, upset a lot of golfers. But then to pile on that he could go out and maybe shoot a 58 the second day. I don't know if you saw that, but he was basically like, yeah, I might fuck around and shoot a 58 tomorrow.
Yeah, so I can't remember the exact quote, but it was so funny. He's like, well, I've shot 50 or 59 in my life, and based off of how I play today, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Like, it's like, okay, dude.
Buddy, you did that like probably at your home course, which you've played a jillion times.
Right. So, you know, he's almost like creating a little bit of a villain for himself in a sense, which I guess I can respect that because that sells. He's like signed with an agency. I mean, this guy is like his lessons have to just be canceled. I mean, if you wanted a lesson from Michael Block, good luck. It's never happening.
Yeah. I will say that the biggest loser in this whole situation is the RBC Canadian Open gave him a sponsor exemption like the day after the PGA Championship, which isn't until, I don't know when the exact, I'm assuming probably like July. So I feel like this was very much one of those internet stories that,
yes,
like the 20 minutes of fame, 15 minutes of fame is done. He's going to go shoot 1,000 at the Canadian Open, and like they're not going to get their money's worth out of it. I'm not sure. They're not paying him, but I feel like they thought they were going to get a lot more out of that than what they are.
They bought high and they're going to sell low.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's how. So the RBC Canadian Open, I feel bad for them. They were the losers. But nowhere the other takeaways. I feel like we did need to touch on that just slightly. And it's funny, I haven't really heard anything. Like once he played bad, the media almost like kind of for once the media realized, like, okay, we might want to let this one die. Because I haven't heard much about him since.
Yeah, he's back at the pro shop.
Yeah. Crazy. All right. Let's move on to a little bit of college golf. So if you guys remember, we had we talked a little bit of regional talk for men last week. We talked a little bit of stroke play championship for the women. We now have results for the women match play portion of the event, as well as the men's stroke play, as well as the match play, which the championship is actually happening today, Wednesday, May 31st. So as far as the men go, North Carolina won the stroke play portion of the event. Florida finished T2nd. Illinois, some good Midwestern love, finished T2nd. Pepperdine 4th. Georgia Tech 5th. Florida State 5th, Virginia 7th, Arizona State T8th, and that is the cutoff for the top 8 as far as the results for the match play portion. As of right now, going into the finals, it is Georgia Tech taking on Florida. In the semifinals, Florida beat Florida State. Florida is the 2 seed, Florida State the 6 seed, and then UNC fell to Georgia Tech in the semifinals. So as of today, like I said, May 31st, starting at, I want to say these are probably local times, so about 4:30, 4:35 Eastern time, the championship for Division I will take off or take place. Florida versus Georgia Tech. As far as the women's match play goes, Stanford got upset in the semifinals of the women's championship. I want to say Wake Forest ended up beating USC 3-1 in the final. Some takeaways, Amelia Mikilaga shot at 1-4-2. Catherine Park for USC 1-3-1. Rachel Kuhn 1-6-4 for Wake Forest. And Lauren Walsh 1-3-2 for Wake Forest. So congratulations to Wake Forest on their women's championship in match play. I believe this is their last year. We didn't play it, but we were out there. They play both the men's and women's championships at Greyhawk Golf Club, which from the sounds of it, I think this is the last year they're hosting it there. And the rumblings is that they're not necessarily disappointed with that decision. That this is maybe a little bit of a meh golf course.
Interesting. Well, good thing we didn't play it.
Yeah, exactly. As far as Division II, Grand Valley State was our lone representative from the area. Now I can't find. You know, Brad keeps saying you need more computers. He might not be wrong. So Grand Valley made it through, or made need more screens rather. Grand Valley made it through the match play portion of the Division II championships was at Avalon Lakes Country Club in Warren, Ohio. Some sneaky good golf in Indiana and Ohio, and it's actually very cheap. Cobb, we need to think about going down there. One of these
I would be 100% down. I remember, what was it, last year, 2 years ago, you did that trip down to Indiana?
Yeah, which was fantastic. Like, the golf was, if I would say Michigan golf is like an 8.5 out of 10, I would say Indiana is maybe like a 7.5, but the price is just like, just dramatically different in a good way for Indiana. In the match play portion, Grand Valley State unfortunately did lose in the first round to University of West Florida. Drew Coble was the one bright spot for Grand Valley, who he won his match. I'm not sure how they do Division II matches, because it's not like a match score. They have a stroke play score, so I am not entirely sure how that works, but Drew Coble was the one bright spot. He did beat his playing opponent, Patrick Pote from West Florida. Moving on to, we're gonna get a little bit of our bag today. So we have the NJCAA, which is the National Junior College Athletic Association Division II Championship. This was in Missouri at Swan Lake Resort. We had two schools represented from Michigan, Grand Rapids Community College and Muskegon Community College. Both finished at 19th place and 23rd place respectively. Grand Rapids Community College shot 1280. Muskegon Community College shot 1284. And outside of that, I think that's all I have for college golf as I'm looking through to see if I see anything else, which I do not. So I didn't,
so
oh, and actually
just,
one more thing today. Go ahead and talk, because I actually have some regional action to talk about too.
Well, I was just going to add, it looks like the championship for the men's is actually today, and you can catch it today, as in we're recording Wednesday. You can catch it on Golf Channel. I don't know when this will get out, but
yeah, I mean, I'm sure it should be on around 4:30. I think 5 maybe.
Yeah, it says 2 to 6 Mountain Standard, so that would be what, noon Eastern.
Yeah, it would be. Oh, maybe those. I think. Maybe those were in Eastern time. The times I saw were 1:35, but I wasn't sure if that was in Pacific time or if it was in Eastern time.
You know, it does say that. That is weird, because it says 1:35 and then below it says 2 to 6. So I don't know. Regardless, it should be on Golf Channel today. So
check it out
if you have the time.
Yeah. And what I forgot to mention, regionals for high school boys took place for Division Four was yesterday, Tuesday, May 30th. And then I think Petoskey actually plays their regional today, the 31st. As far as who qualified from this regional, the top three teams advanced from each regional and then the top three individuals. And if you guys remember, I think I mentioned it last week, this was at Harbor Point Golf Club over in Harbor Springs. Charlevoix won the event with a 309. Glen Lake finished second with a 319, and Sutton's Bay finished third with a 339. And I'm trying to see if there are any individuals from worth mentioning. Yeah, I want to say it's Hudson Vollmer. I have that. Yep, Hudson Vollmer led Charlevoix career low, I believe, with a 71. Blake O'Connor and Michael Hootman from Glen Lake shot 75. And Nathan Schaub of Sutton's Bay and Carson Chumler of Harbor Springs tied with a 76. Outside of that, Chumler, where am I going with this? Carson Chumler from Harbor Springs was one of the individual callers from Harbor Springs with a 76. The other individual qualifiers were Jonathan Ringstrom from East Jordan, Olin Alzanzi from Harbor Springs, and I think that that is it. So next week I will have Petoskey regional scores. Hopefully they're going to they're probably going to shoot their lowest round of the season to qualify as a team, but hopefully worst case scenario we can at least Andrew Licata or Max Faulkner, two of their bright spots, will have a good day and maybe individually qualify. You ever played Harbor Point?
I have not. I never got to play there. Have you?
Yeah, quite a few times. I don't know. I won't say anything. I won't say anything too mean. All right, I think that's all I have for college and high school. Like I said, we'll have scores for that's going to be the Petoskey of the Worlds and the Gaylords of the World, and I'll see what Traverse City is up to as well for next week. All right, moving on to the Memorial at Muirfield Village, hosted by none other than Jack Nicklaus. As I said in the opener, this is the 10th designated event, coming off of a couple of recent renovations at Muirfield Village, trying to make this golf course play longer, trying to make it keep it up with the times. Just as recently as 2022, we have multiple changes to holes 16, 17, 16 is that par 3, added about 25 yards to it. We added another 20 yards to number 17, now stretching out to over 500-yard par 4. Par 72, 7,500, or closer to 7,600 yards. It's a top 5 course as far as approach and around the green difficulty. Rough stretching out to length somewhere in the 4-inch range, depending on how far away from the fairway you are. Course looks like it's going to be firm and fast. I think similar to up here, it has been dry and humid. Looks like high 80s, low 90s for the week, which is a little bit of a change of pace from last year, which I think it was in the 60s last year for this tournament. Scoring history since the renovation is kind of in the low teens. I kind of expect that to be the same case this year. It's always tricky with new renovations and the grass growing and how the ball is going to react in certain places. But you'd kind of think that 10 to 13 number is not a bad place to see a guy finishing up. Any other takeaways? One more thing, I guess, now that I'm looking at it. Smaller than average greens for Muirfield Village, 5,000 square feet. 14 holes have water in play. Of the 18 holes, 50 greenside bunkers. Short game ends up being a somewhat of a priority behind approach is going to be number one priority. You have to have a good approach game, i.e. Scottie Scheffler. And then getting up and down is going to be priority number two, because there is a little bit of trouble around the greens, which was the case last year when Billy Horschel won this event. He gained 5.2 strokes around the greens and five shots during the around the approach, or for the approach rather. So definitely some things to keep in mind. Anything, any other takeaways that you you have for this event?
No, I mean, you hit it pretty well there. I've always really liked this event. I'll just say, aside from a course statistics standpoint, as a Midwesterner, I've always liked that this event is in Ohio. I just wish that it wasn't Jack Nicklaus's event, but we won't touch on that too much. But I think this week, if it is anything like us with the little rain, it's going to just play so firm. I mean, I can't imagine they're much different than us here.
No, it does not sound like it.
So, yeah, smaller greens, guys who can hit long irons, that's going to probably be a good play this week. Guys who are accurate with longer irons into the green, short game like you mentioned. So,
just some past winners to mention. Not super sure how relevant it is, just given the past renovations, but obviously some names to keep an eye out for. Patrick Cantlay has won here twice in 2021 and 2019. I think that's an obvious name to keep in mind. And with a little bit of salt on the side, remember that Patrick Cantlay was losing by six shots before John Rahm withdrew because of COVID in, I guess that would have been in 2021. In 2021,
yes.
So, yeah, so in theory, probably wouldn't have won that. I think I would have to think John Rahm probably would have won that year, as he was up by, I want to say it was six going into Sunday. So Patrick Cantlay went to 2021. John Rahm won in 2020. So I think it would be silly not to be thinking very long and hard about John Rahm's number this week. Patrick Cantlay did win again in 2019. Bryson DeChambeau in 2018. And then from there, really not much takeaway from this. Jason Duffner in 2017, no offense, Jason Duffner, one of my favorite all-time players. William McGirt in 2016, David Lingmuirth, which is a weird one. David Lingmuirth can barely hit the ball of his own shadow, and that is just a testament to how good his short game is and his accuracy. But that just goes to show that it maybe doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be a long ball hitter. Between Duffner and David Lingmuirth, 2014, Hideki. And then from there, really no other relative names besides maybe Justin Rose. Matt Kuchar won here in 2013.
Kuchar, he's been
playing some decently good golf over the last several months. Let me see what else we have.
So I had just a few more things on some of the guys in the field this week. I'm curious to see how Jason Day plays. He's been playing well, and this is almost like a hometown event for him in a sense, since he lives so close to here now. Colin Morikawa, great iron player. Curious to see how he plays this week. We just mentioned Hideki's name, prior winner of the tournament. He's been coming back into form, starting to play more. Those are a few guys that I have on my radar. Aside from them, taking a look at some of the boards for guys that are looking favorable this week based on the models, Sungjae Im is looking strong based on.
Yeah, I've seen his name everywhere, but this is coming on. He's coming off of two back-to-back missed cuts. He did win in South Korea, which would have been 3 or 4 weeks ago now, in his home country. So I think, but everyone is saying Sungjae. So I think that definitely has some merit to it.
Yeah. So these are the data golf probability odds, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they like Sungjae this week, and they like Patrick Cantlay. Those are really the two big names. Aside from that, some of the smaller guys, I guess we'll call them, Adam Hadwin, Aaron Rye, JT Poston. Those are a few guys that the models are really liking this week, so could be some guys to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Just going through, so I'm looking at, I don't think I've ever even thought about doing this, but if you can find it, there has been, so running back to 2014, 2014 finished in a playoff, 2015 finished in a playoff, 2016 finished in a playoff, 2017 no playoff, 2018 playoff, 19, 20 no playoff, 2021 playoff, 2022 no playoff. If you can find like a bet that says this will finish in a playoff, I would be, that's worth taking, I think.
It might be.
I was just looking, I like just glanced for it really quickly on FanDuel to no avail, but maybe do some shopping. And
think
see.
Of how electric it would be to just be like rooting for a playoff for money.
Yes. Oh, I think that would be absolutely electric.
On that topic of FanDuel and winning money, taking a look at FanDuel Michigan for the tournament this week, to no surprise, we have Scottie Scheffler at the top, 6-1. Behind him, John Rahm at 7-1. And then there's Patrick Cantlay at 10-1. We mentioned him. That's curious to me. I would keep my eye on that. We've got Xander at 12-1, Rory 14-1, Victor at 20-1, Tyrrell Hatton 25-1, Colin Morikawa as well at 25-1, Jason Day 28, and then there's still quite a few names here, so I'll keep going. Justin Thomas 30-1, Matt Fitzpatrick 35, as well as Hideki and Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler all at 35-1. Gosh, I could keep going on, but I'm going to call it there.
Yeah, this is obviously a stacked field. I mean, I would say this is probably like the sixth, maybe even lower than that for a lot of guys, but this is probably a sixth or seventh best tournament of the year, I would say. I mean, I really look forward to, and it's always, as you said, a very good field earlier on.
Yeah, no, it should be a fun event.
Patrick Cantlay, 10-1. That looks like the books don't want to lose a lot of money on Patrick Cantlay this week, because 10-1 is very low. I know he has the history to prove it. He's 6-6 here. Two wins, I mentioned, in 2019, 2021. T3rd, a solo 4th. He has 9 straight top 25 finishes going into this week. I think if you it's one of those things that if you're just going to do it, you got to do it. And then maybe just that's just your one player for the week, and hope he plays as well as he has played here in the past and has played over the last 9 starts on top of that. But 10-1 for Patrick Cantlay in a designated event, it seems low, but I definitely think his course history 100% backs it up.
Yeah, I would agree. And I'm just kind of perusing around the site now, taking a look at some guys that are interesting for top 20 finishes at plus money. You've got Jason Day, Justin Thomas, Sungjae, Cameron Young, Jordan Spieth, Matt Fitzpatrick, Ricky Fowler, and the list goes on from there. Those guys are all plus money for a top 20, so there's could be some value this week.
Where's Corey Connors in that top 20?
He is at plus 175.
Yeah, so that's a name that comes to mind really quickly, just with the emphasis on approach. Corey Connors hasn't missed hit a golf shot in maybe 20 years, since he was like 6 years old. And he's won in San Antonio this year, T8th at Quail Hollow, T12th at Oak Hill. He's never missed a cut at Muirfield, and he has 2 top 25 finishes. He's playing really good golf right now. And it seems like this is a course where you need to gain a strokes on approach, and that's exactly what Corey Connors does week in and week out. If his putter is just even partially cooperating for 4 straight days, that is a name that deserves to be talked about.
I feel like he's probably just the nicest guy. Like, he probably would be the best guy to sit on a dock in Canada and bass fish while drinking a Labatt with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's. Can you think of anyone better? Canadian. Just a good old Canadian.
So one other thing I wanted to touch on here for odds this week, you can get at FanDuel Michigan, Kurt Kitayama is the last guy on the make miss cut odds board at -176 to make the cut for Kurt Kitayama. We've talked about him, I believe, last week as a guy who's been playing well this week. So who knows? I mean, making the cut might not be too crazy for him.
Minus, you're telling me you're going to bet -176 for him to make the cut? You're crazy.
I mean, it's interesting. It's caught my attention.
You're crazy, man.
I'm just looking for value. Wherever there's value.
I would say that might be like the exact opposite of value, though. That's like...
You're and in what sense? I think that's like
say,
a... Gar-
wait, did you say +171 or -171?
-176. That's not that bad. Oh, I mean, to make the cut?
Yes.
He just has to, like...
Just make the cut.
Just has to make the cut. I mean, come on, man. You can do that, can't you, Kurt?
You can't, come on, Kurt.
You want to be on the Ryder Cup team? You better well make the damn cut here at Memorial.
Or not. Yeah. I won't condone that bet. I won't.
These are all responsible, yeah. Responsible predictions here.
I think just based off of how well Victor Hovland's been playing, 210 to top 10. I'm seeing it's got to be close to even money to top 20. He is no. That's top 30 actually. So top 20, he's -110 at top 20. I don't necessarily hate that. I just keep thinking everything that comes to my mind is just ball striking, needing a ball strike, and that's kind of Victor's game. I don't really see a world where Jon Rahm plays as average as he played at Oak Hill, especially given his tournament history here. I would have to think that he bounces back in a big way, and then everything I said earlier makes me think this is a good course for Scottie Scheffler. So I don't know.
I mean, the guy, I might go as far as to say he might be the best. Does he hit his irons better than Colin Morikawa?
Right now he does, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And nobody hits a long iron probably better than Victor. So that's another one you just mentioned. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. I could see Scotty just going out and winning the dang thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he hasn't won in a couple weeks, so he needs to do something. Or I'm going to start doubting him again.
As soon as you're on his team.
I'm trying to see if there's any other takeaways, any other guys that stand out to me. You mentioned Sungjae. I mentioned Victor. Jordan
Spieth
is a weird one. He has seven top 20s and 10 appearances here. So obviously he knows the golf course. Jordan Spieth, I don't know. I don't know what to make of Jordan Spieth these days. He may be injured. That's
a break,
always,
man.
Yeah. Well, can you take a break?
You can't.
I don't know if you can. I don't think you. I don't understand how. We do a gosh darn golf podcast, and I just don't understand how this whole thing works with the designated events. And if you're injured, like, how are you supposed to? You can't play. Like, I understand you only get one sit out event of the year, which it looks like Tony Finau and Max Homa are taking advantage of that this tournament. If you're injured, like, how do you just can't? You just got to go out there and suck it up for a couple rounds and miss the cut.
Seems pretty crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Anything else for Memorial before we get into this?
No, I think that's it for Memorial. You want to talk JB?
Yeah. You can. Yeah, take the reins. I read the story, but I was kind of skimming it.
Yeah. So. Here, give me 1 second. I have it. I've got it pulled up here. So there's a story coming out, and it's been kind of evolving this morning more as the day goes on, of professional golfer JB Holmes, short for John Bradley Holmes, who played in a like local event, scramble, which was not from the looks of it, for charity. This was actually a for money event, and entered under an alias of just John Bradley with a 8 handicap. And then they actually, funny enough, I mean, they figured it out, obviously, because he's a professional golfer. And midway through his second round, they yanked him off the course.
Right, I mean, rightfully. So I have there's a lot of layers to this that I'm not. So from what I'm understanding, it was not a net event. It was bring your best team. So it didn't necessarily matter. Like, they didn't break any rules as far as like allowing a PGA Tour pro to play in this. I do think where it becomes very messy is, like, if those other teams that are in this Calcutta knew that there was a PGA Tour pro on the other team, I bet you they would be putting a lot less money into the pot. And I think that's why, I believe from what I read, they pulled him out of the Calcutta, but they were still able to compete in the tournament, and they ended up winning the tournament, obviously, because he's a PGA Tour pro with like $20 million in earnings. But they took him out of the Calcutta portion of it just because, like I said, if those other teams, I think it was 22 teams, the other 21 teams knew that JB Holmes was Jonathan Bradley.
Right.
They probably would have said, no thanks on this one.
See, I was more so envisioning they just dragged him off the course, cuffed him, cuffed him.
No, I think, yeah. So I saw he tweeted out a picture last night of the trophy, and it said something along the lines of
I played Scrabble?
I played Scrabble this weekend.
Under my real name.
The rule was bring your best team, and we did. Or something like that. I was like, I kind of respect that.
So I think, and to your point, yes, they didn't do anything wrong to that sense. Where it gets fishy is the 8 handicap. I mean, obviously, this dude's not an 8 handicap, and they're playing for 30 grand.
So I also was thinking about that. I could see a total world. I did see a gin thing posted today of a guy named Jonathan Bradley in Tennessee, but I could easily seeing it could be JB's a plus 8.8, and the pro shop is like, well, what the hell is this? This must be an 8.8.
That is fair. Yes, I could see that, because if he did register under John, because I can also see it from that side where he registers as John Bradley because he doesn't want the attention of JB Holmes as a pro golfer, and then registers as a plus 8.8. They're like, this John Bradley's an idiot. He's a, yeah.
What's this I can guy see doing? That side he too. Must be an 8, but he must be in a minus 8.8. Yeah.
No. Yeah. So I could see that side too, but just a pretty funny story overall.
Yeah. And I'm surprised that, I guess it wouldn't necessarily work, but there are a lot of guys that aren't JB Holmes. There are guys that are on the PGA Tour that could easily do this that aren't. JB Holmes is just a little bit too recognizable, and he has a very, distinct swing. But I mean, there's guys that probably have, we'll say, $7 or $8 million in earnings that could easily go do this, and they people wouldn't have a clue. But
yeah,
JB Holmes maybe stands out a little too much.
Yeah, it's a bit of a unique name too.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that you can think of?
No, I think that's it. Did you play any golf this weekend?
I played a little bit. The holiday weekend messes up my day. I didn't know what day of the week it was until today, pretty much, because Mac was home sick yesterday, so I still don't really know what day of the week it was. I know today is Wednesday. I played Bayview on Friday. I played somewhere on Saturday, and I couldn't tell you where. I just can't remember. And then I played Hidden River on Sunday. That was the first time I played Hidden River this year. Greens were not very fast, but the course was in good shape. I think the greens were, I think the bag staff said they were rolling an 8. So they were a good speed if you wanted just to ram and jam it. But outside of that, the course was in good shape. It was not super busy for Memorial Day weekend. But it sounds like they had been busy, so that's good for the economy up here. It sounds like they've been doing about twice as many rounds as what they typically do this time of year. So that's great.
Nice. Yeah, that's good to hear. I love that course. I love Hidden River.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a fun course.
Very nice. It's very playable. They put in, I think more courses need to do this, where they have those, the composite tees, where if it's a shorter hole, they put you from the blue tees. And if it's a short or a longer hole, rather, they'll move you up to the white tees, mm-hmm. where it just feels, because that's actually a weird course where if you play the white tees, it's like 6,000 yards. And if you play the blue tees, it's like 6,700 yards or 6,800 yards. Just a huge difference between the two yardages.
Yeah. Yeah. All the courses down here on my membership, they do that like combo tee. Mm-hmm. It's really nice that I play that often. I'll do that. And it usually they try to hit that like right around like 6,300 yards, which I feel like is a good distance. And it's nice because they'll actually have the combo tees in like when you post your score.
Oh yeah,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
I've definitely seen places where they'll have it on the scorecard and then you go to post your score and you're like, well, I didn't really play the black or the blue.
Yeah, exactly.
I played, you know, so.
Did you happen to play any golf while you were playing host?
I did, actually. We went out on Monday. We played Memorial Day. I went out with Lauren and her dad and her mom. I think her dad is like really pumped that I play golf and Lauren's starting to get into it because he likes to play. So we went out and played nine. I caved this weekend and I bought a new putter.
Oh yeah. I can't believe we didn't talk about
that. I converted to a mallet putter. I was playing a blade before that and I was putting just like with my eyes closed, like Scotty Scheffler. So I went and I hit a few mallets and I just decided that it fit my swing a lot better. I think I tried to force the blade a bit just because I like blade putters, but I think for my stroke, mallet just makes more sense. So went out and played a lot better. And then last night actually got out and played Watermark down here, Watermark Country Club, and played really well. So putter's coming around, still had like 35 putts, but that's like getting better for me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think people might just spit out their coffee when they heard that after everything you just said, like how much better it's getting. And then you said 35 putts.
But yeah, it takes a special person to shoot a 79 with 39 putts, you know, or shoot a 77 with 35 putts. So
yeah, that'll do it. That's the only thing I've ever struggled with going to a mallet, which is why I've tried to stay away as much as possible. Minus a few exceptions, is I don't have any feel with it. Like the insert is. It feels too soft to me where I, especially when the greens get really fast at Bayview, I feel like I'm out there on an island more so than what I feel like when I'm with a blade. But if it works, it works.
I can see that for sure because I think, so my old blade, so you have the Scotty, which is, you have the Newport?
California, something like that.
California. So I, my old one was the Odyssey, new one's an Odyssey. And based off of both of them, I'll say that the blade does have like a slightly better, I don't want to say better feel off the face because I think that the ball feels better coming off the mallet face. But I think that for those touchier putts, the blade, I almost wish I could just have both of them in my bag, but then I'd look like a psycho.
Yeah, you'd have to make a lot of putts to rock two putters.
Oh yeah, no, we're nowhere near that.
I have to think that your old Odyssey had an insert in it, so it probably doesn't feel like a huge jump from no insert with a blade to a mallet with an
right.
insert. Well, that's good. I mean, really, at the end of the day, guys, having a good putter, I swear you could literally use a broomstick, and if the putt goes in, it doesn't matter what it looks like. There's no pictures, just whatever gets the least amount of putts is all we're looking for.
No, I mean honestly, when we were playing with Mac a few weeks back, and I saw him dropping his hand all the way down towards the hosel, I was like, you know, maybe I should try.
Well, oh yeah, yes, yeah. He, I've cut that out of his game. he started just, he thought he was Happy. I don't even know where he saw that. I want to say it was Happy Gilmore, but he's never seen that movie. At least I hope he hasn't. At 6 years old, I don't know who's showing him Happy Gilmore. But he does this thing where he like takes, he's lefty, and he takes his left hand and he just goes down like similar to like what Mark Hubbard does, where he takes his left hand, essentially puts it down by the head of the putter. So he's like crouched all the way down. And after I saw him miss like the seventh one, I was like, buddy, let's just do it regular until you make them all. Until you can make all those, then I don't really care what you do. But he's gotta make sure. Because that was costing. He doesn't like missing putts. And I was like, well, if you don't like missing putts, then you probably just putt the regular way.
I did love how much he hated missing putts. Because that was like when I was younger, I didn't care about putting at all. But yeah. It seemed like he liked the most.
Well, it's funny because we got that, which we didn't really talk about. I bought a birdie ball putting green last week sometime. And Mac has like been using just as much as I have. And that's really, like we say it all the time, and that's what's going to save you so many shots. I mean, the days that you're making putts, like the game just feels so much easier, and you can right so many wrongs so quickly when you can make a 10 footer or 12 footer for par. I think it's Tiger Woods. That's how his dad taught him. Maybe that's not the best example of parenting, but I think he just all he worked on was putting in short game, like at a young age, because that's really where it. Everything is just an extension of chipping and pitching. Just everything just gets a little bit longer. Even putting, like everything's just a little bit more of an extension of putting to chipping to pitching to mid-iron long game like that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. So I think that was it for me. I didn't really play a ton of golf. Those were just the two rounds I played. I don't have, I think, really much on the schedule this week. Nothing for the weekend, I don't think. So we'll have to try to see what we can get out and do.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you got to come up. We're into like a weird little stretch of, we mentioned it, weather being nice up here. But for the end of May, beginning of June, the weather for this next like 2 weeks looks so good.
Oh, man. You can't beat it. No, I just wish we could get a little bit of rain.
That would be nice. I would take a look at nighttime. Nighttime rain.
Yes, nighttime rain. Yeah.
Or
we
during,
like nighttime
or during
rain.
Work hours.
Or during work hours Monday through Friday.
All right. Well, good luck to everyone at the memorial. And we will talk to you all next week.
All right. Have a good weekend, everybody.